Welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. This is a space where we seek to create and cultivate healthy conversations between those things we geek out on and the philosophical and theological questions that often arise out of our fandoms. Like, what does it mean to be human? What makes a hero? What makes a villain? How do the stories and narratives we geek out on shape how we live in the world? We are your priest to the geeks. We aren't all ordained, but we see ourselves as mediators at the intersection of geek culture and going deeper in our faith. We don't always have to agree, but we do respect each other, and we see everyone as a beloved child of God. Everyone geeks out on something, so come geek out with us and enjoy the show.
You're listening to an Anna's Owl Ministries podcast.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. We are your priest to the geeks, and by that we mean that we are curators, facilitators, mediators. Some would say geekologists, to help curate those things we geek out on and the bigger questions that arise out of our fandoms. We are your geekologists that try to go deep into our fandoms, and perhaps some really important questions will rise to the surface. Today's episode is a what if episode, and not only a what if episode, but a Star Wars what if episode. And I have to make a confession. I've been what-ifing Star Wars since 1978 with my Star Wars action figures. And so I'm really excited about this episode and what could come out of it and how this could change the narrative and the mythos around Star Wars. Man, I love these kind of episodes. And you demanded it. You voted for it. We vote for it online, on Facebook and other places. And so this is the question that rose to the surface. What if Count Dooku trained Obi-Wan Kenobi? And so I can't do this episode alone. I'm going to bring on some friends, some geeks, and they're going to help us out with what ifing this particular question. And when I bring them to the surface, when I bring them here to this YouTube video, to the screen, they're going to share with you the first Star Wars movie they ever saw. So first up, we're going to have our friend John. John, what was the first Star Wars movie you ever saw?
There we go. Had some mic issues. Anyway, the first Star Wars movie I ever saw, that would definitely have been the 1999 special edition VHS of the original trilogy. That's what my dad had, and that's what I grew up on.
There you go. So you got that awkward Jabba the Hutt in A New Hope where Han stepped on Jabba's tail walking over him. You saw that?
Sure did. That's the version I grew up with.
Nice. All right. Cool. All right. Next, we have our friend Andy. Andy, what was the first Star Wars movie you ever saw?
It was almost certainly Return of the Jedi, and probably whatever version was broadcast on, you know, TV in the early mid 80s.
Nice. So you saw Return of the Jedi in the theater?
No. Recorded off of the television, the home VCR, something like that.
Gotcha. Cool. That's a good one. All right, TJ, what was the first Star Wars movie you ever saw?
Phantom Menace.
Phantom.
On DVD.
Mm-hmm. Phantom Menace on DVD. Nice. Yeah. Nice.
That's the first one I remember.
Right. And we know what your favorite one is, right? Attack of the Clones? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. By far.
Easily. Easily. Well, friends, hi, friends. I'm Will, and I am the first movie I saw, I've shared before, was A New Hope in the theater, 1977. 5-year-old little William saw A New Hope in the theater, and then I could not wait to see the next one when it came out. And man, Empire Strikes Back just blew me away as a fan, and been following ever since. And so, huge Star Wars fan, and love this medium and the sci-fi and the story that it tells and the imagination that it sparks in everyone. And I can't wait to get into this episode. But before we do that, I would like to know what we are all geeking out on. There's so much geeky content out there. There's so much to geek out on. It's hard to keep track of it all. But we'll go around this way. TJ, you go first. What are you, if it's not a video game, if it's not Valorant, what are you geeking out on?
What if it's a different video game?
Okay. What if
it's, okay, yeah, okay, it's Minecraft. Yeah.
Minecraft.
Yeah. Some friends of mine started a modded Minecraft server and it's crazy.
Nice.
It's nuts. We have spaceships and guns and thorium. I'm not sure what the thorium is for yet.
That's why I keep playing. John, what are you geeking out on these days, buddy?
All right. So, I've gotten Barbara started on Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order on the PS5. And because I've already played through it once, but she hasn't played through it. And she's a big fan of the Nathan Drake Uncharted games. So this is kind of like a happy marriage between my geeky Star Wars-y obsession and her being able to do an exploration game. And she is a completionist, so she will have lots of fun exploring the dungeons.
Nice. That's good. I like it. Andy, what have you been geeking out on?
Probably the thing I'm geeking out the most on lately is the Big Biology podcast. It's been around for a while, but I just started listening. So, you know, biologists come on and talk about their latest research, their latest books. So I've been just kind of plowing through the back catalog there.
Ah, man, I love that decup. You know, I was thinking maybe, you know, you and I are X-Men fans. So we were talking off air right before this, the X-Men reboot coming up, the X-Men animated series. But no, you went with the biology podcast. I love it. Have you heard of the podcast Ologies? It's just called Ologies.
I have heard of it. I have not given that one a try yet.
My daughter, who's a biology major at Appalachian State, said she had been listening to it. She used to always pick on me for listening to so many podcasts. And then she goes, "Dad, I found a cool podcast. I think you would like it, Ologies." And she goes into all the ologies that are out there and kind of science and background. It's very well edited and is pretty good too. Yeah, a lot of good podcasts out there. I'll share where I'm geeking out on. It's a good time to be an X-Men fan. Man, those are comics I grew up on, and I like what's happening in the comics now and this upcoming reboot with creative teams, and the X-Men animated series just blew me out of the water. And I loved how that series landed, and I'm pretty stoked on X-Men right now. So in the comic world, comic realm, man, they keep luring me. They keep luring me. Every now and then I'm like, maybe comics as a medium has fallen kind of stale, or maybe I could go into other things, and then boom, they do it again. They lure me in, they get a creative team or get a new idea and throw it at me. I love comics. So that's where we are. And so it's time to get into the meat of the episode.
I would be remiss to move on without mentioning to John and Barb, you know, I'll tell later. I am a Drake, like of the Francis Drake, Nathan Drake line, but I'm real.
Yeah. Oh, like a seventh son of a seventh son?
Yeah.
You're a legend?
Well, my grandma's dad's dad is Francis Drake.
Oh, that's awesome. That is so sick.
I think that deserves a celebration.
I think you're going to be the only person who's going to be able to unlock some secret tomb with your bloodline or something. I don't know.
That's the goal. I don't want to dive too far into it now, but it does involve diving and it is in a cave and it might be where he hid some treasure.
I'm curious where that came up from. What's the context of bringing up Drake?
Uncharted. He mentioned
Uncharted. It. Uncharted. Got it. Okay. Got it. Now I'm making the geek connections. Love it. All right, y'all. So here's our episode. We are doing What If Count Dooku Trained Obi-Wan Kenobi. And before we jump into like what that would mean to both of these characters and what it would mean to like the ongoing story of Star Wars, you know, I like to share with others, you know, we all what if in our lives. And what if is a good, I think, tool and helpful thought experiment to help us kind of sort through things in our lives. Now, we could be obsessed with it and what if ourselves to death, and like it could paralyze us in our decisions. We have to make decisions, we have to move, but yeah, there are certain decisions we make or don't make that have an effect on the our worlds, other people's worlds and relationships and continuities. And so yeah, the decisions we make and the actions we take make a difference in this world. And so whether it's a big decision or a small decision, it has an effect on others. And so when we what if or do this what if experiment within these episodes, we're trying to tinker with it a little bit and turn that prism just a little bit, or turn that diamond just a little bit to try and get a different view, and maybe some other things about this fandom or our lives will come to the surface. And so maybe a little bit more later on when it comes to that. But that's kind of why we do this thought experiment of what if, because it helps us kind of think deeper with the fandoms we love and this particular IP of Star Wars, but also maybe in our lives. It can help us kind of think through the important decisions we make in our lives and in the relationships that are entrusted to us. And so as we think about this what if question, what if Count Dooku trained Obi-Wan Kenobi, let's go with a little bit before we need to know a little bit about their history and their background. And I'll just, you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi has been there from the beginning as an older weathered Jedi on the sands of Tatooine, who's overlooking and watching a young Skywalker. And we come to find out his story more and more and more throughout this series, even as a Force Ghost, and his background and history. And then, of course, in the prequels, he shows up as a Padawan what was his official title when he shows up in A Phantom Menace? He's not, is he a Padawan? Is he a master? Is he a knight? What is he?
Qui-Gon?
Obi-Wan.
Obi-Wan is a Padawan at that point.
He's a Padawan at that point, so he still has his
braid. He's just older.
Yeah, he's got the braid.
He got the braid, just an older Padawan. Later he gets moved on up. But then we follow him as young Obi-Wan through the prequels and the Clone Wars and that kind of thing. We know his story some, but Count Dooku, he shows up first Attack of the Clones. Attack of the Clones. That's the first movie he shows up in, and he's a little bit more mysterious, but they unpack his story a little bit later on when it comes to Tales of the Jedi, the first season of Tales of the Jedi. You get a little bit of the backstory, a little bit more there. There's been some books. There's been other things. He was showed up in the Clone Wars animated series. But you know, of course, we know more about Obi-Wan. We've lived with him longer. Count Dooku's a little different, but his effect in terms of his approach to the Force and the dark side of the Force and why he rebelled and what that meant and his stage of what that meant to Anakin and helping him turn to the dark side, or choices he makes, are pretty significant. So any of my co-hosts here, what do we need to know about Count Dooku that would affect if he trained Obi-Wan Kenobi? What was significant about Count Dooku that makes a difference?
So Count Dooku really liked to emphasize the swordsmanship, with the lightsaber. And that's something that shows in his apprentices, which was just kind of unfortunate that the only one we really get to spend time with is Qui-Gon. And then
right. He
fights Darth Maul, which, you know, kind of not great for like a first real lightsaber fight.
Right. He loses.
But yeah, a little. Just a little. But that's really Dooku's whole thing. Was training the swordsmanship. He's very Force aware, but he's not reliant on it. And he honors the elegance of the blade, the lightsaber. And I think a lot of that does just come from him being Christopher Lee, who is like a master fencer and war veteran and stuff. But it's
Sir
fun.
Christopher Lee.
Sir Christopher Lee.
Yeah. And he showed up in some Tolkien and some Willy Wonka the Chocolate Factory. He's shown up in a couple places.
Yeah. And I love. I used to read like the Star Wars encyclopedias when I was younger, and they were all like Dooku's lightsaber was designed so that he could get special movements out of his wrist so that he could confuse his enemies.
Ah, he's got that kind of curved hilt, right?
Yeah.
That's good. Good point. Good point when it comes to that. Andy, what are we forgetting here in terms of Count Dooku and what we need to know about his approach to the Force and his history that might affect? Right.
Well, it's probably significant that he was trained by Yoda.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. So that is that's also part of his backstory, is that he was a Padawan to Yoda. I don't know off the top of my head how many Jedis were trained by Yoda in that way over his 900 plus years of life, but
so the ones we know about are Mace Windu and Ki-Adi Mundi.
Ah.
Okay.
Maybe we'll learn more in the Acolyte, whether he had more Padawans if he shows up. Yeah, that's good, Andy. Like yeah, he Count Dooku was trained by Yoda. That was his mentor. Yeah, John.
And also,
go ahead, Andy.
Well, maybe John will bring it up. So go ahead.
what we should know about Count Dooku, I think.
Yeah, what's the mystery there?
He has a different type of perspective, also with his social status and upbringing, and it would bring a different dynamic, I think, into it with his interactions, I think, with Obi-Wan.
Like him being literally a count, like a leader of like, is it a entire planet or is it a civilization island? Where was he, like a ruler? It come from like a high class?
Kind of like a high class society on a planet, not strictly like the planet's leader, but kind of in charge of their little government.
Yeah.
It wasn't Tales of the Jedi. I feel like I need to really dive into that. I kind of watched a couple episodes and got distracted.
I think that is helpful, getting into his a little bit, because you see kind of like him, you know, so he was trained by Yoda. He also was a mentor, helped train Qui-Gon. And then you see Qui-Gon had like a different, you know, his whole point was his dedication to the Force, not necessarily to the organized religion around the Force. So he was like, yeah, let's listen to the Force. Yeah, this is helpful. This Jedi Order is important, but the Force is more important than the Jedi Order that is built around. And so that frustrated Obi-Wan Kenobi a little bit. He's a rule follower. Obi-Wan's a rule follower. And though while Yoda helped mentor him some too, Qui-Gon, you know, would kind of push the envelope when it comes to that. So I think even Count Dooku, if he trained Qui-Gon or as a mentor to him, then some of that must have rubbed off a little bit, that it's more about the Force. And so got disenfranchised or deconstructed or got disillusioned by some of the actions of the Jedi Order that made him think like maybe they aren't the right path. I disagree with them. So he was there in the Jedi Order and then left to go be a count and ruler. And it was there that he was wooed by Sidious to be a Sith Lord or to the dark side of the Force, to be manipulated to kind of create this civil war among the Republic, so that eventually, of course, Sidious could rule over as Empire, not as Republic. So I think it is something about the Jedi Order. Maybe you guys know something about, like, you know, they don't keep you there. If you want to leave, yeah, you join it, you learn the ways of the Force, but there's a certain point that you're like, you know, I'm bound out. I don't want to be a part of this anymore. They let you go. They're not going to be like, well, then we're going to throw you in prison for leaving us. It's not like necessarily a cult that you have to stay. You know, he was able to leave and say, fine, forget y'all. I'm moving on and go hang out the planet. Anything there that I'm forgetting or was in books or comics or something? Andy, do you know any more that we should mention?
Well, I mean, to developing on that point, right, we see him or his face memorialized in the Jedi temple or in the Jedi training area as one of these 20 Jedi that have gone away from the order at different times, not all at once, but over various generations, there were different people that walked away and they chose to memorialize them with busts. So, you know, that not only did they allow it, but, you know, there was a certain sense of like, this is something we want to remember. This is something we want to keep in the forefront as part of our history, rather than trying to, you know, cover it up or kind of pretend like it didn't happen or, you know, only mention it if asked, sort of thing.
Yeah, so it's not like he was excommunicated. He wasn't excommunicated. Right, yeah. He left, and like we remember his impact here in the Jedi Order. Yeah, TJ.
Yeah, that's why I miss Legends, because in Legends, one of the reasons that Dooku left the Order was because he had an apprentice who left the Order, and now that just doesn't exist.
Right.
She was really cool, though. Her name was Kamari Vosa. She was super strong. Nice. She used two sabers.
Oh, like... That's out of interest, right? Yeah. Teach us, do I see a slide there you want to share?
Is there I found a nice little master apprentice chart. Which is just from a user on Reddit. You know, full credit. His name is Valdemar 209. I didn't have time to like make one of these myself. I found this one. I think it's pretty good.
Well, thanks for giving credit or credit. That's important.
Yeah. Yeah, it shows us like we've got, you know, Yoda, Luke, obviously, who I forgot to mention earlier, but I guess he counts. They didn't really train that kid. Ki-Adi-Mundi, Mace, Count Dooku, Asajj, Grievous, Qui-Gon, Savage. It goes on. He actually I guess the chart could tell us if we just look at it, but Dooku, I think, had the most apprentices with the most screen time.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's a good point. I'm glad you found that. You see how they're interconnected, and there's within the Jedi Order and their approaches to the Force and this community, they help mentor. There's a high committee, you know, that kind of rules things. There's bishops and archbishops and whatever. And I guess Yoda's is about as a pope as you could be when it comes to the Jedi Order. But I think you see how they're interconnected, and the Force does what it does outside of them and all of kind of living beings. But you have these people who practice it, who wield it, who study it, and they have their own, just like their personalities are different. And just like in this world, our personalities are different. And you know, while I consider myself a Christian, and John's a Christian, our personalities, we might approach it from a different angle to help each other or help each other see it in a different light. And so that's the same way when it comes to the Force as well. So it is important to kind of think through when we do this what if. Now, we talked a little bit about Count Dooku. Now Obi-Wan, what do you know about his approach to the Force? How does he think of it? Like standard canon storyline of Obi-Wan. What's your impression of how Obi-Wan approaches the living Force and the community of the Force?
If you'd like to support our show on Captivate, feel free to go to captivate.fm and find our show, subscribe. You'll get access to any future online D&D campaigns over there. You'll get an extra bonus question for 4 to 8 times a month. You'll get extra content like that through there. You also get a one-time donation you could make to help support the show right on Captivate. So you don't get anything for the one-time donation, but if you'd like to just support the show once, do a quick donation, you can do that through captivate.fm. Our overhead includes editing software, marketing, equipment, recording software, and a whole lot of other stuff. And we really appreciate everybody who can help keep the lights on.
John, we'll start with you, buddy.
I think Obi-Wan has a very deep trust of the Force, but sometimes he gets distracted and in the Jedi Order, and a lot of the rule following and other stuff gets him kind of distracted, so he doesn't necessarily connect as well as I think he could, as seen in like the Kenobi show, where he keeps trying to connect to Master Qui-Gon but can't because he's got the inner turmoil and the regret and surprise that Anakin's still alive and turned into Darth Vader. And there's a lot of emotional trauma he basically has to get over in order to wield the Force again and get connected to it.
Yeah, good point. Yeah. And there's a reason why he's like, I'm sending. Yeah, he trains Luke a little bit and kind of does that prep work. But when he is struck down and becomes one with the Force and leaves after the first movie, A New Hope, episode 4, there's a reason he sends him to Yoda. Yes, Yoda's still alive, but he doesn't train him in the kind of the Force Ghost way. He sends him to someone else. Perhaps maybe Yoda he's older, has more wisdom, but maybe not as much trauma when it comes to that. But yeah, I think you're right. Obi-Wan's a rule follower. He takes on maybe, you know, that grief of losing Qui-Gon, but then, you know, he takes on the mantle of training Anakin, the chosen one, and there's some guilt there. He feels some guilt that he didn't quite complete that mission and that his apprentice fell to the dark side. Andy, what's your thoughts on kind of Obi-Wan's, the original Jedi wizard that we were like, oh, there he is, the mysterious one, his approach to the living Force?
Yeah, you know, I think Obi-Wan, you know, apart from that that first film, you know, The Phantom Menace, right, he sort of always comes across as older than his years. And, you know, all the things he's been through, all of that that he's experienced, I think he's just sort of the world-weary, you know, I'm going to stick with this, right? This is the right path, but man, is it costly and does it weigh me down to go this way? And, you know, maybe that's why in 10 years, he goes from looking like Ewan McGregor to looking like,
Alec Guinness.
it's a rough life. It's a rough life.
Yeah. That desert wind, man, really ages you. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, you know, you know, you're talking about, you know, Christian experience and so forth. I think there's kind of a strong, Prophet Elijah kind of vibe of, I'm all alone. You know, I'm the last one here. I'm not going to lose faith in what I'm doing, but man, is it tough to be all by, you know, the only guy, holding down the fort, so to speak.
Yeah, good pull. That's nice. Nice. Yeah, and I do like the Obi-Wan Kenobi series. There's certain things that happen in editing choices. I was like, huh. But it does get a little bit more into his psyche and where he's at, where he comes from, and that gap between, you know, Revenge of the Sith and watching Anakin get cut down, high ground, whatever, and then eventually get to Luke and staying steadfast to Luke. And maybe that's there is more hope because there are the twins that are out there. TJ, what would you say, you know, Obi-Wan, what are we forgetting about his approach to the Force, and would that make a difference or not?
No, I just, Obi-Wan, kind of like, I was going to say he has a transient view of the Force, but it's not really true. We just get to see him from the time he's like 17 until he's 90. Mm-hmm. Not really. He goes from like 20 to 70 and just looks really old. But it's just natural for him to, he doesn't view the Force as a tool like Dooku.
Right. Yep. Yeah. That's the difference with Qui-Gon. Like, and you know, in terms of their posture to the Force community, I think, you have the Jedi Order and seeing chinks in the armor of this, you know, organized religion around the Force. Yeah, they're peacekeepers, but you see how they can be manipulated and their kind of dogmatic approach to the Force. And Qui-Gon was a little bit more gray, a little bit more loose with that. And yeah, and then, you know, what is the Force? It's something that flows through you, going to lead and guide you and look to the future and the prophecy and the chosen one, or use it as a tool to do what you think is right and use it on your own. And I think Count Dooku lost faith in the Jedi Order and wanted to do things his own way and was manipulated by the dark side and brought over because he thought that's what would bring order. He could use the tool. The person who ultimately thought they could use the Force as a tool for their own wielding of power, of course, is Palpatine. And then he has his apprentices that he brought under his own wing so that he could manipulate them. And they were tools in his eyes. He didn't care much about them. They were tools in and of themselves for what he wanted. And that's what Count Dooku became, a tool to create a civil war that eventually became a tool so that Anakin would make a deeper choice or a wrong choice of beheading, killing, not for peace. And he just knew that that wasn't something that he should have done. And this step a step closer to the dark side of the Force. Anything with these two, kind of their history, their approaches that we need to address before changing some things around? We have our action figures out. We're going to change some storyline. George Lucas is coming to us asking some questions. Disney saying, if you're going to do a show and this is the what if you're going to do, we get to write this story. We get to play in the sandbox a little bit.
I feel like it is important to like recognize when we're talking about this, the Jedi, as we see them, kind of take the it takes a village mentality. Like, you can have your own personal apprentice, but that apprentice is also going to work with other masters and knights. So there's not like a, like, Qui-Gon does this, so does Obi-Wan. That's why, like, they will inherit traits that they like, that they learned, but that's not, it's not like a one-to-one thing. It's not like a father-son kind of thing, because there are so many Jedi involved with raising each Padawan. But we're going to ignore that for the purposes of this what if question.
That's right. Well, you know, yeah, that was as a kid, you're like, Obi-Wan was like, yeah, I'm going to send you to my master Yoda. And then when he shows up in the prequels with Qui-Gon, I'm like, wait a minute, I thought Yoda was his master. What is going on? But they share. They share. And Yoda's been around a long time. They have different masters. They have different things. It's like a school. You know, you don't go to just one professor. You go to a lot of professors in college to study biology or whatever. So I think that makes a difference.
The School of Jedi and Jedi Wizardry.
That's right. There you go. Do they have a dark arts class? Oh, that's later. I'm not allowed for that one. But they'll go from there. All right. Let's do some what if-ing. All right. If we switch this around, okay, so Obi-Wan's no longer trained by Yoda, Qui-Gon, strictly under Count Dooku. What would this change in the Star Wars story? How would this change Obi-Wan's personality? Andy, what do you think?
That's a tough one, personality. I spent a lot of time thinking about sort of like the plot and those kinds of the questions. And gaming out a scenario. But yeah, in terms of his personality, I mean, you know, I think there a lot of the things that we touched on that he might have been influenced via Qui-Gon. You know, Qui-Gon probably was also influenced by Count Dooku. So I'm not sure that it would be a huge shift in personality. Maybe a little bit less less inclined to go, you know, by the book with the Jedi Order and so forth. You know, maybe a little bit more skeptical or suspicious of the decision making there. But you know, I think we're talking about shades and degrees rather than a big shift in personality. And you know, it occurred to me, you know, even though we characterized Obi-Wan as a rule follower, and I, you know, I think that's largely accurate. You know, he did make the fairly bold decision to train Anakin when the entire Jedi Council looked at him and went, no way, we are not touching this kid. We don't want to have anything to do with training this kid. And Obi-Wan, you know, took him under. Anyway, so, you know, I think there are facets there that I think, you know, would just be tweaked or highlighted maybe a little bit differently, but I don't see it as being a huge shift in perspective.
You made me think of something. So maybe shifting rule follower to being more like faithful. He wants to be faithful to who he feels like he's going. So he made a promise to Qui-Gon. He's going to train, and he's going to remain faithful to that. He's not budging. And then he made a quest. He's going to watch over Luke and Leia, I guess, and Luke, and say, like, I'm going to stick with this guy, and nothing's going to move me from that. So if he was with Count Dooku, maybe he's faithful to him, and he more leans into this kind of being disillusioned from the Jedi Order and follows Count Dooku, maybe off to leaves the Order, and maybe Obi-Wan's one that can be easily manipulated to become a Sith later on to the dark side because he's so faithful to those he feels like he's in debt to or made a promise to. So he made a promise to Qui-Gon, made a promise that he's going to train Anakin, and then later I'm gonna watch over Luke and make sure he does it. So he's faithful. Maybe that's what it is. Rather than a rule follower, he's faithful. John, anything there that spark, you know, in terms of how this would be different and how Obi-Wan would approach things?
I think it would be hugely different. Imagine if Qui-Gon was replaced with Count Dooku in all the scenarios of the first movie, like the Phantom Menace. Imagining how Count Dooku would have handled getting stranded on the planet, how he would have handled meeting the young Anakin, how he would have handled all of the big decision making and what far-reaching consequences that would have had having him in the place of Qui-Gon, you know, mentoring over Obi-Wan in those moments.
Man, and would Dooku lose in a lightsaber battle with Darth Maul? Who do you see winning that fight? If you switch it up and put Qui-Gon, you remove him and put Count Dooku instead of there in Qui-Gon's place. Yeah, I like that movie and see where it goes. And then you have the Duel of the Fates where you have the classic swordsman going up against like the ninja of Darth Maul. Who do you think wins that, John?
I think Obi-Wan and Dooku would have won the fight in the beginning. Mm. I don't think it would have dragged on as far. I don't think Qui-Gon was as good of a swordsman as Count Dooku.
Mm-mm. Mm. Do you agree?
Yeah. I think if Dooku had fought Darth Maul alone, he probably could have won.
Okay.
Yeah. Like Dooku does not rely on the Force, but he is very strong in the Force. Mm-hmm. So, and he's a better swordsman. So like it's really not, I think it might throw him off for a second, but he's experienced. He's fought before.
Yeah. He basically, did he take on 3 Jedi there at the end of, The Attack of the Clones, like, takes out Obi-Wan, takes out Anakin, takes out Yoda, and then flies off. You know, it's almost like a draw, but like, he doesn't lose. He doesn't get stabbed. He's out. So 3 big heavy hitters.
We see him fight Yoda and Obi-Wan and Anakin at the same time, you know, like separate occasions. But he fights Obi-Wan and Anakin at the same time, like, 4 times.
Yeah.
And it's not until the last time that he lost. Which is not really his fault, but
yeah,
I just don't see. I love Darth Maul. I don't see Darth Maul winning that fight because if I'm fairly certain, if we had to order the best duelists in the, I almost call it the league for some reason, in the order, it would be Yoda. The order. I'm just gonna count all the Jedi and Sith, like Yoda, Palpatine, Mace Windu, Dooku, then maybe Darth Maul. But there's a pretty big gap there. But Obi-Wan's up there too.
Okay. All right. Andy, help me with this one. They've sparked some other questions about we're reordering, you know, Phantom Menace now. So if Darth Maul is killed and Dooku is not, and now he has Obi-Wan and they discover Anakin, what becomes of Anakin and then Palpatine's way of manipulating it? Will we ever see a Darth Vader? Do we see Palpatine resisted? Do they all turn to the dark side and get manipulated? What the power of or of two, but like, how does that change up the relationship with Anakin eventually, or as the promised one, but then does he ever turn to the dark side, or did they both turn to the dark side, or all three of them turn to the dark side? I don't know. My head's spinning here. Help me out, Andy.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. My guess would be, right, so the big thing about the Phantom Menace and Darth Maul is that the Jedi become aware of the fact that the Sith are active.
Yeah.
For after a long period of thinking that there were no Sith. Right. So that's kind of the big reveal of that film. And so I wonder if being directly confronted with the Sith and the reality of the Sith in the present moment, if that makes Dooku, you know, it almost inoculates him to a certain degree against manipulation towards the dark side, right? So we don't really know, or at least, you know, in the live action stories, we don't see. Maybe it's covered in more detail elsewhere. But you know, by the time we're introduced to Count Dooku, he has already been turned by Palpatine. So we don't really get to see that,
right?
What that looks like. But if we imagine that it's something similar to what happened with Anakin that we did see, you know, there's that like slow temptation and sort of like being drawn in without realizing what it is that you're actually being drawn towards, right? Palpatine didn't reveal himself to Sidious right away to Anakin, so I imagine something similar would happen. Something similar happened to Dooku, since he had also been a Jedi, and so maybe he's more wary of the possibility of other other Sith infiltration, other Sith influence, and is more on the lookout for that, and so. Maybe he's more suspicious of Palpatine, maybe not as, you know, another Sith, but having been impacted, or, you know, he's looking out for that Sith influence in other places where he might not have been so wary of it otherwise. I don't know. That's my kind of gut reaction there.
Like that. TJ, yep. I see some thoughts.
Yeah, I think there's really no way around the Anakin's corruption.
Okay.
I'm not sure if he gets turned into a cyborg at this point, but... That's mostly because I don't think Dooku would have fought Anakin at that point.
Okay.
I think Dooku would have been much more willing to let Anakin go follow his own ideas, which would have been Palpatine's ideas, because, you know, we've kind of lined them all up.
Yeah, it's hard to talk like what would happen to Obi-Wan and Count Dooku without bringing in Anakin, because Anakin's so tied up to Obi-Wan's story and Qui-Gon's story. And so we switch those kind of mentors and masters with each other. This idea of perhaps Dooku and Obi-Wan not being manipulated, but there's a different way that Anakin, because if the Jedi Order still's like, nope, too old, too risky, we're not going to train him, does that then, Dooku, does that disillusion him to the Order in another kind of way? Not necessarily what we saw in like Tales of the Jedi or other places, but he's like, fine. If you won't train him, because I believe he's the promised one or whatever, then I'm going to do it on my own and leave the whole Order and take him with me. And that's how Palpatine gets to them. And it's hard to see what Obi-Wan would do there. Is he more loyal to Count Dooku, or is he more loyal to Yoda at that point? We've already seen that he's more kind of loyal to Qui-Gon and so told Yoda, no, I'm going to train him anyway. But there at the end, when they don't make Anakin a master, he's like, listen to those guys. You know, he's it's not like Obi-Wan kind of sides with the Jedi and says, Anakin, you're being a little bit immature, right? Am I wrong with that? Like, he's kind of like, yeah, be patient. He's like, I don't want to be patient. I don't want to be patient. John, help me out here. What are we going to do with Anakin? We had Count Dooku and Obi-Wan. What do we do with Anakin?
So Count Dooku would have a different perspective. I almost feel like he would have still become a separatist, and he would have tried to draw an Anakin into that realm. But eventually Palpatine would still have gotten to Anakin, because we're still assuming that a lot of the other timeline events happen, like Anakin blowing up the battle droid command ship and other things like that. But, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess I wondered if Obi-Wan's going to be loyal to. Like, I think Count Dooku's, yeah, I like you're right. Count Dooku's going to be a separatist. He's going to go off and do his own thing. Anakin eventually is going to turn to the dark side so that he can be, there's something about his fate of being Darth and a Sith and to, you know, eventually come back around. Yeah, whether he'll have his limbs cut off or a cyborg or whether he should be more powerful after that. But I'm still trying to think about where would Obi-Wan land with this?
I do think Obi-Wan would end up going with Dooku because he's been raised by, apprentice to Dooku. He's kind of adopted some of his mannerisms, I would think, like his tendency to act more regal and appeal more to his own desires than the Jedi Order would like.
Yeah. So here's a scenario. Yeah, go ahead, Andy. Go.
Counterpoint a little bit. Another thing that we've seen about Obi-Wan, especially in the recent television series, is his care for children. Right? He can't. You know, there's a lot that would tell him he should walk away from this Princess Leia mission. Right? There's a lot of different times where he could or he should, or it seems like that would be the logical thing to do, but he can't. He can't do that. He can't let her suffer. He can't let her go. And then we also know that he spends so many years of his life watching over Luke. Yeah. And, you know, even we see a little bit in Phantom Menace, right? He has some concern for Anakin as a child. And so I find it hard to picture that Obi-Wan looking at Anakin as a young boy, right? If we're talking about that first kind of moment of, or is he going to be trained or not? I find it hard to imagine any version of Obi-Wan looking at that young man and saying, no, we're gonna leave him to his own devices.
I love that. Yes, thank you. I love children. I love the youth of my church. I love my own kids. I love camp. I love youth ministry. So yes, Obi-Wan being a youth pastor or youth leader and taking kids under his arms makes me happy. I like that. Here's what I'm thinking though. So if I'm gonna rewrite this movie, here's what I kind of, if we're going to have Christopher Lee be the one to lead us through all the movies and into the original trilogy, maybe we have Count Dooku rebels against Palpatine, ends up killing Palpatine, and he becomes the dark Sith Lord, and Anna becomes his Sith apprentice, and they rule the universe in a different kind of way rather than Palps. So I like this idea of Count Dooku really going into the dark side and like, nope, now that I have like a really like powered up Anakin without being a cyborg and breathing machine and that kind of thing, maybe he just he kills Palps and then they rule the universe together until Obi-Wan, you know, find some kids, whether it's Luke or Leia or somebody else. You know, you don't know if does Padme die in this version too, or does she go off with Anakin and they're like the dark king and queen of the universe? Does she still die? Is there something there that is that what the fate is that turns Anakin to the dark side? And you still have the twins that Obi-Wan has to look over and swing back around with. But I like this idea of Dooku killing Palps, and now you have Christopher Lee as the main dark villain of the original trilogy. What do you guys think?
That would have been way cooler than Palpatine is back.
Somehow.
John, can you see Count Dooku as like this, the evil Sith Lord sitting in his throne room? Could that be it?
I think he would be, in this scenario, I think the Separatists would have won the war, and then there would be the Separatists and the Republic would be separate entities, and it would be, I don't think he'd be like an Imperial ruler because he wasn't really about that. That was kind of Sidious's thing and Sidious's influence. He really just kind of wanted to separate from the Republic, which is why they were the Confederacy in the first place.
Right.
And I think his influence in Anakin, Obi-Wan's life, I think Obi-Wan would have ended up marrying Queen Satine and leaving the Jedi Order. And I think that Anakin would have still married Padme, and I think they would have had a different dynamic. But again, in the timeline, I think Palpatine's influence would have still accomplished a lot of the same things. But in this case, I believe that the Separatists would have been a a faction in the Republic would have lost the war, so to speak.
It's now you have some Obi-Wan Jedi babies running around. A whole different kind of thing.
Jedi Mando babies.
Jedi Mando babies. Yeah. That's the title of this episode, Joshua. Jedi Mando babies. Come on. That's what we want.
They would have had the new Chosen One for sure.
That's right. TJ, do you like that? Do you like that scenario? Do you want to marry off Obi-Wan and have some Jedi Mando babies? Yeah.
That's what he deserves.
I think so. I think so too. I like that. All right. Andy, you and I are probably the elders here who've been around with Star Wars the longest time and seen these movies the longest. Does this change kind of Luke's fate and Luke's story? Because this has a trickle-down effect down the line of turn of Anakin. If it's going to affect Anakin, it's going to affect Luke. How does this affect Luke, Andy?
Right. Well, I mean, it sounded like some of these scenarios, right, there isn't a Luke. So that's a big change. But let's assume that there is some Luke in one of these versions of the timeline. I mean, you know, does he grow up, under Emperor Dooku and Darth Vader? Does he grow up to be the next Sith in line? Right? Mm-hmm. We saw those flashes of darkness in him in the original trilogy and even into Episode 8.
Yeah.
Does he encourage, right? Maybe do they rethink the rule of two, right? The familial lineage there. Does that cause Anakin to rethink, I want there to be a place for my son, but I don't want to have to kill my master or my apprentice.
That's what I want.
Maybe they're just sort of a natural transition, right? Maybe Dooku, doesn't live forever. And so there's a natural transition from Dooku and Anakin to Anakin and Luke. You know, there's a fairy of the dark. And so maybe now you have a brother-sister conflict. Maybe Leia is still the revolutionary, the dark sheep of the family. She goes off, maybe influenced, still influenced by her mother. I think that's a bigger question, right? What does Leia look like having grown up with her biological mother, right? We see a lot that they have in common. Right. And so maybe she becomes even more, it's hard to imagine her becoming even more of a leader and, more precocious than she already was. Right. But, maybe we see some more encouragement in that direction as opposed to, the Obi-Wan series suggested a little bit of, her adopted parents weren't totally on board with her precociousness. But maybe her mother, her biological mother encourages that a little bit more, as somebody who was a queen at the age of whatever, 9, 11, whatever it was, encourages that a little more. And so maybe there's a lot more sibling conflict there.
And what if she's raised from the beginning to be a Jedi, not just like as a queen or a low, like let's start her as a Padawan younger. And then you do have that conflict. It's not the rule of two, but you have this family tree of force that has impact. And so then it becomes not just like as John was saying, like separatist civil war among like the planets and the systems, but you have this family divorce or schism and then their approaches to the force. And you have this kind of yin and yang, like my shirt of Luke and Leia going at it. So TJ, you're biting at the bit. You want to see a trained Leia as a Jedi like I do.
Oh yeah. That's what I want. I want the Legends Leia back.
I love that. I think we created a good movie and alternate timeline here of how things will go. And I think you could still, even later on with like the Disney trilogy of the Force Awakens, you could then, even in the midst of this Jedi and this Empire or whatever, and if the rebellion wins, you still have this kind of tension between this family, but you have a Force. Like even if Luke does, like he's not the legend of maybe him, Anakin and Luke rule the universe as father and son under this kind of oppression as Sith. But then, you still have Leia out there and you can still see the Force Awakens as another Jedi Order, as someone else pop up, that the Force is then birthing or lifting up to bring balance to the Force in the universe. I like that alternate kind of timeline there. John, what do you think? What else needs to be tweaked there? I know you're an OG guy, but you got this Disney. What would the 7, 8, 9 look like if this is the way things went with Luke and Leia?
That is a good question. Because you'd want to know if the major events still stay the same, if Luke still overcomes his father, or because if Darth Sidious is out of the question and Dooku reigns supreme as a separatist leader, then wondering how the, you know, Darth Vader come into play at all, or if, you know, Darth Sidious just ruled the Republic and not the separatists. It's an interesting dynamic trying to think of how far in the future would be affected if just simply Count Dooku replaced Qui-Gon in the timeline.
Yeah, what a difference that makes. Because it's still Star Wars, right? You still have this intergalactic Star War between Rebels and the Empire. You have a Civil War. You have the Clone Wars. The Rise of the Sith. You have Attack of the Clones. I mean, it's war in space, the Star Wars. So there still would be conflict. There would still be this war, but this tension between light and dark, between that, it changes different when you change just one chess piece out of the way and change a mentor in. It does have a ripple effect in how that is. And this map that TJ showed up here of all these kind of interweavings of these Jedi and how they're connected and who they're leading or mentoring or manipulating, change some of these around a little bit and you have a different story or a different way that we're like. And I think that goes to show just how important our relationships are and how we treat our relationships, you know, and the decisions we make that, you know, we are in an entangled web of relationships and the choices we make and how we act in those makes a difference with others. Not just how I treat people, but the relationships I choose to be a part of and pay attention to makes a difference. And there's big what ifs out there in terms of how much energy or intentionality I put behind the relationships that I'm entrusted with. Guys, and just in thinking of like the relationships we're entrusted with and what ifing, what comes to mind in terms of thinking about like our faith and the communities that we're a part of?
Well, I mean, it's kind of like the It's a Wonderful Life type of story where it's like, if I wasn't here and someone else was in my place doing this same job, what would be affected? And that's effectively what we're doing with Count Dooku in this scenario.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. Andy, what do you think?
It's a great question, right? You know, you can always point to, you can look back and see certain people having had an impact, right? So someone invited me to this session or that activity. Somebody handed me a Bible or somebody challenged me with this or that. And so, you know, what would have been different if that person hadn't been there at that moment? You know, at the same time, you know, we have personalities that have, you know, some core features that are persistent. So maybe somebody else would have, you know, steered us, something else would have come along. We would have wound up in the same direction. But, you know, it's one of the classic questions, right? How much of who we are is contingent on very specific and unrepeatable events, and how much of it is, you know, part of trends and patterns that are stable and persistent. You know, I can think of, you know, the specific moments in my, you know, history where, you know, a specific teacher or a specific leader asked me a question or, you know, gave me a suggestion. And, you know, that has stuck in my head, right? How impactful that was, I don't know, but it stands out as a memory, which makes me think that it was significant in some way or something that I come back to. And so, you know, presumably, you know, a lot of people have those for, you know, whether their career or their faith journey or their family situation or whatever. And so, yeah, you know, it's impossible to answer, right? We can't really experience counterfactuals, right. But I think it's worth looking back, right? That, you know, what are the markers that say, well, this is the way that we came. We don't want to go backwards. And we don't want to forget where we've been or where we've come from.
Yeah. Put some importance of some of the decisions we got. I've definitely had, you know, former youth of mine come up to me. It's like, Pastor Will, I remember when you said this. I'm like, oh my gosh, what did I say? And I don't remember saying what they said, but I guess I said it because I had an impact. And I'm like, whoo, I'm glad, you know, it just makes me like, God, I should be, you know, I am mindful of and in the weight of my action and words, I know makes a difference. So I try to take that seriously. But there are times you're like, man, I hope I don't say anything to embarrass myself or others or tear people down, but instead build people up. TJ, how about you in terms of thinking about what if in your life or the relationships that make you more mindful or more intentional or is there a kind of a fate that, you know, things are going to happen as they happen or not?
Yeah, I think if you took like one of my theological mentors, like if you took my grandpa and replaced him with Count Dooku, things would be slightly different.
100%. More sword fighting. Or yeah, more elegant sword fighting, a different size hilt.
A lot more.
I think about this. Like this question comes to me because, like, I think about, you know, I've been at this church, Holy Trinity, for 12 years now, and I had a hard decision because I loved my last church so much, and it was a hard decision to leave that one to come here. But we felt like it was a good call, and the right time in our lives, and the age of our girls, and Cindy's career, and but I think about, like, if I didn't take that car, I stayed in South Carolina, how things would be different. Like, I would not be on this podcast right now. It'd be different. Maybe I would be. Maybe I would still have met Joshua and TJ somewhere else in a different kind of way. But it would, like, definitely an alternate timeline. Like, what if I just stayed in South Carolina at Christus Victor Lutheran? How would my life be different? Who would I have met or not met? Or how would I build upon? What would have happened in the world? So it's hard. Again, like John said, that's a wonderful life, how things would be different. But, you know, it just goes to show, like, being mindful of our decisions and who we're connected with makes a difference. Oh, friends, thank you for thinking through this thought experiment with us when we talk about Star Wars. Man, I love Star Wars so much. And again, I'm going to probably do more what if-ing when it comes to Star Wars, and with shows of past and movies of present and shows of future, I'm going to what if. Man, I'm already what if-ing the Acolyte coming down the road and what they're going to do with the show and how that makes an impact on other things. I'm going to try to calm my expectations and as TJ is a good mentor and my Jedi master when it comes to expectations and letting things be what they should be on their own rather than me rewrite them before they ever happen. But we have a bonus question for you all. And if you hop on Patreon and just a couple bucks a month, support us over there, you can get this in the Patreon feed. You'll get the answer to our question. I know you're dying to know the bonus question, which is, who would you want to mentor you in the ways of the Force? Those who are listening out there, you may have your answer, but if you want to know Will's answer, Andy's answer, John's answer, TJ's answer, you got to join Patreon. Hop over there. We're going to answer it, and we will share with you. We'll share with you who would we want to mentor us. Would we go Sith? Would we go light side? What impact would that be? Come on over there and see. Friends, thank you so much for listening to another episode of Systematic Ecology. Keep a lookout on the socials what the next what if could be. You could place your vote and you can make an impact on what our next what if episode should or could be. Thank you for listening. We know there's a lot of choices out there when it comes to podcasts, and know that we love you. The Geekverse loves you. The Force loves you. And you are not alone. And remember, you are chosen people, a geekdom of priests. Boom.
Hi, my name is TJ. I'm here to tell you about the Systematic Ecology Shop. That's where we post all of our merch. It is hosted on CreatorSpring, and we have a ton of really cool merch, mostly clothing. We have hats, extra soft t-shirts, sweaters, hoodies, and more. Our hosts wear them all the time. It's actually super comfy. We have glassware, mugs, which everybody loves a good mug. Fill out your cupboard. Get rid of some old ones, which is the part that I never do. That's why I have too many cups. We have cloth bags, posters, and it's really stuff. We like to put our icons on there. We like to put quotes, things we come up with. And it's cool. It's a cool way. And a lot of it is pretty subtle, too, to show support for one of your favorite shows. And my personal favorite is actually our SG dad cap, which I've been reluctant to buy it because now I have to wear hats at work. And then I get tired of wearing hats, but it's really cool. It's really understated. It is our logo right here. And then it says Systematic Ecology on the back. It's great. It's a really good hat. We have a few of them floating around. Check it out. And if we could all just rock the SG dad cap in public, I think that'd be pretty sweet.
If you love our show, you can follow the whole network in a single feed on Spotify at Anna Zara Ministry Podcast or the network page on Apple Podcasts. There you'll find shows like The Homely, The Whole Church Podcast, My Seminary Life, Let Nothing Move You, Dummy for Theology, The Bible After Hours, as well as mine and my husband's show, The Clies, where my husband Taylor and I go through weekly discussions in a devotional conversational method to help us all get closer to one another and God.